We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go, episode 456 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Monday, December 5th, 2022. And, well, it wasn't a win, but it wasn't a loss. It was a tie. The Commanders now are 7-5-1, a 20-all tie at the New York Giants on Sunday afternoon. Former Redskins kicker Graham Gano missing a 58-yard field goal attempt as time expired. Washington's first tie in the regular season since the 27-all tie with the Cincinnati Bengals in London on October 30th, 2016. I must say, this tie on Sunday afternoon felt a lot better than that tie with the Bengals in London 6 years ago. That tie felt like a loss. This tie felt like, well, a tie. Even though the Commanders did blow a 10-0 early second quarter lead. But how about this? This 20-all tie for the Commanders at the Giants is the Giants' first regular season tie since the 7-all tie at the Redskins on Sunday Night Football on November 23rd. 1997. That was the famous Gus Frerotte headbutt the FedEx Field wall game. But yeah, not since that game have the Giants had a regular season tie. Hello and welcome to this Commanders postgame show, Monday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. What do we call this? It's not a victory Monday. It's not like a gloomy Monday. It's a tie Monday, I guess. I don't know. Ties in the NFL are rare. Ties in the NFL make for wordy records, as the teams in the tie are no longer something and something. They're now something, something, and something. But ties are a reality in the NFL. The truth is that this tie for the Commanders is fine if they win their next game, which is a game against the Giants at FedEx Field in Week 15 off the Week 14 bye. But the truth also is that the Commanders, for now, are out of the playoffs. The Seattle Seahawks improved to 7-5 with a 27-23 win at the Los Angeles Rams on Sunday, and now the Commanders are 8th in the NFC, percentage points behind the Seahawks for the NFC's third and final wildcard spot, because 7-5-1 is not as good as 7-5. There's also this. San Francisco 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo suffered a season-ending foot injury in the Niners' 33-17 win over the Miami Dolphins on Sunday, and that is of particular significance to us as Commanders fans, because the Commanders are at the Niners on Christmas Eve afternoon, Saturday, December 24th, at 4.05 p.m., and ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter on Sunday night reported that the Niners are signing former Redskins quarterback Josh Johnson off the Denver Broncos practice squad, not necessarily to start, but obviously he could end up starting, as he did end up starting for the Redskins late in the 2018 season. There is a lot to process with all that is happening with our Commanders. This 20-all tie for the Commanders at the Giants, a lot that we're going to get into with this game. Next segment, I'll go in-depth on what was a wild game for the Commanders offense. There was some good, as in the great fourth quarter comeback, and there was some not so good, as in the pass protection. I'll also address the officiating in the game. I'll then talk Commanders defense, which to me was good yet again. Perfect, no, but good enough to win, absolutely. And the defense continues to play well despite missing some key pieces. You will hear the best of head coach Ron Rivera's post-game press conference as well. Also on the show, I'll discuss the rest of our Washington, D.C. area sports weekend. I'll talk Wizards. Not a good weekend for the Wiz. Friday night, a 117-116 loss at the Charlotte Hornets. Sunday evening, a 130-119 loss to the Los Angeles Lakers at Capital One Arena, as well. Most of you were still processing the tie at the Giants. The Wizards were processing Anthony Davis scoring 55 points. Yes, 55 points. He also had 17 rebounds and 3 blocks, and Bradley Beal got hurt. Just lovely. I'll talk college hoops. Conference season opening wins for Maryland, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. Also, another loss for Georgetown. For number 22, Maryland, a really nice 71-66 home win over number 16, Illinois, on Friday night. Number 3, Virginia, a 62-57 home win over Florida State on Saturday afternoon. Virginia Tech, the Hokies, an 80-72 home win over number 18, North Carolina, on Sunday afternoon. And Georgetown, well, it blew an 11-point halftime lead in a 74-71 home overtime loss to South Carolina on Saturday afternoon. I'll talk Capitals, another loss for them. Also, two more injuries for the Caps. 5-2 loss at the Calgary Flames late night on Saturday night. And I have an Orioles segment for you as the 2022 MLB winter meetings are underway. We on Saturday afternoon had multiple reports of a move by the O's, them having agreed with free agent starting pitcher Kyle Gibson on a one-year contract. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com, including if you would like to advertise on the Al Galdi podcast and grow your business or practice by reaching thousands of people every episode at a very affordable price as the Commanders continue their playoff push. Hit us up. The email address is thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Lots of feedback on the Manders off this tie at the Giants, including the officiating. A tweet from Panda DMV: getting a tie when you're up against both a good team and the refs is a win. Good point, Panda. Good point. A tweet from Richard: might have been the worst officiating I have seen in the NFL this year. Tweet from Michael: happens every time we play. Refs hate the Commanders. Tweet from Rob Bailey: we had the win that felt like a loss earlier this year against Chicago. This tie against the Giants feels more like a win. Keeps us square in the playoff mix. Yeah, I mean, it really depends on how you look at the game at the Giants, because like I said, the Commanders did blow a 10-0 lead that the team had early in the second quarter, but the Commanders did rally with a terrific late fourth quarter touchdown off a great game-tying drive, the details of which I will explore next segment. Tweet from Put Snyder in Prison. I love some of these names on Twitter. I feel good. The tie pretty much just doubled the stakes for the next game, which will be at home and off a bye. Yes, now finally does come the Commanders' bye week for the 2022 season, and the Commanders could use this bye week. And next up is another game against the Giants. Commanders Giants at FedEx Field in week 15. In a game that could be on Saturday, December 17th, or Sunday, December 18th. We still do not know when exactly that game will be. We do know, though, that Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer free skin cancer screenings. Yes, free. Call 301-396-3401 and make sure that you mention that Algaldi sent you. Skin cancer is among the most common of all cancers in the United States, but the good news is that skin cancer also is among the most curable forms of cancer, right? Just ask Ron Rivera. But get checked, get screened, and you can do so for free with Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. Dr. Verghese is a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs surgeon. He is one of the nation's premier dermatologists. He's a big fan of the Commanders. He's a loyal listener of this podcast, and operating under his direction is the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. The Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland diagnoses and treats a broad range of acute and chronic skin conditions, including skin cancer. And yes, Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer free skin cancer screenings and offer state-of-the-art treatments for skin cancer. Dr. Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland are the DMV's number one outlet for Mohs skin cancer surgery and for superficial radiation therapy, or SRT, which is an alternative to surgical procedures for basal cell and squamous cell skin cancers. You won't find better, more state-of-the-art, or more comprehensive skin treatment and services than what you can get from Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. Early detection and treatment of skin cancer save lives. If you have questions or concerns about your skin, call Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland at 301-396-3401. That's 301-396-3401. And make sure that you tell the Institute that Al Galdi sent you. That's 301-396-3401. You can also visit midatlanticskin.com. That's midatlanticskin.com. Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland, nationally recognized for treating skin cancer across the Mid-Atlantic region. Well, please consider rating and reviewing the podcast. If you haven't yet done those things, you on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify can rate the podcast. 5-star ratings are very much appreciated. And you on Apple Podcasts can write a brief review saying that you like the podcast. The ratings and the reviews help us out a lot, and I thank you for doing them. Well, if you're not sure how to feel about the Commanders moving to 7-5-1 with this 20-all tie at the New York Giants on Sunday afternoon, you are not alone in not knowing how to feel. This was Commanders head coach Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday afternoon.
I addressed them, and I wasn't sure how to address them. Because we came up here and we expected to win, and we didn't. We tied, and it's, because it doesn't hurt us, it doesn't help us, because these are the guys that we're competing with right now. And so next week, or in 2 weeks, we'll have to reset and get ready to compete against them again. So we just got to focus in on the next few days, getting everybody as healthy as we can possibly get them, get everybody back out on the practice field as quickly as we can for next week. 2 weeks, and then see what happens. I'm still kind of stunned a little bit.
Yeah, I think we all are. And, I hate to be a whiny biatch, okay? That is one of the great words ever coined, by the way. Biatch. Thank you, Snoop Dogg.
Biatch.
Yeah, biatch. I do not want to spend a lot of time being a whiny biatch, but the Commanders in this tie at the Giants got done dirty by some bad officiating. And yes, every NFL game features questionable calls and missed calls. And there were some things in the game that went the Commanders' way, no doubt. But there were not one, not two, but three major snaps on which officiating went against the Commanders in a significant way, including two instances that to me were egregious. We'll start with the Commanders' fourth offensive drive. It resulted in kicker Joey Sly's second quarter 42-yard field goal for a 13-10 Commanders lead. The 12th snap of the drive, the snap right before the field goal, 3rd and 10 for the Commanders at the Giants 24. Officials initially threw a flag, but then picked up the flag on what ended up being a shotgun incompletion from quarterback Taylor Heinicke, intended for receiver Terry McLaurin, who appeared to have been interfered with by former Washington defensive back Fabian Moreau near the goal line. The flag was thrown. This was set up to be a massive gain for the Commanders via a defensive pass interference penalty, but somehow, some way, the flag got picked up, no penalty, and the Commanders settled for a field goal. The Commanders' seventh offensive drive. This drive resulted in a third quarter punt, despite the drive eating up nearly 8 minutes off the clock. Yeah, this was a near 8 minute drive, and yet the Commanders ended up punting. But the 10th snap of the drive, tight end Logan Thomas, a 2nd-and-6, 10-yard, illegal block above the waist penalty. I could not stand this call. Logan bounced off the right side of Giants inside linebacker Micah McFadden. Logan did not block McFadden from the back. Now, upon bouncing off the right side of McFadden, Logan wound up behind McFadden, but that is not an illegal block above the waist, and yet that got called that way. I could not stand that call. And then the worst botch of all, okay? And this really isn't debatable, this one, how bad this was. Commander's eighth offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's fourth quarter missed 52-yard field goal attempt. The 12th snap of the drive, the snap right before the missed field goal attempt. On a 3rd-and-13 for the Commanders at the Giants 28, edge defender Kayvon Thibodeau literally ripped off the helmet of right tackle Cornelius Lucas. But no penalty was called. No penalty was called on what ended up being a sack of Taylor Heinicke by interior defensive lineman Dexter Lawrence for a 6-yard loss. I mean, this is not like a judgment call. Maybe Thibodeau did this. Maybe Thibodeau did that. No, this was Kayvon Thibodeau literally ripped off the helmet of Cornelius Lucas, but no penalty was called. Three major snaps on which officiating went against the Commanders in a significant way, including two instances that were really bad, the Logan Thomas and Cornelius Lucas instances, and all three of these instances happened with the Commanders on offense in a game that resulted in a 20-all tie. If any one of these instances is called differently slash correctly, we may well be talking about a Commanders win right now. But the tie, of course, wasn't solely on the officiating. The Commanders scored just 20 points over four quarters and an entire overtime. The Commanders' defense played well. More on that next segment, but the Commanders' offense was the problem. And, you know, I say problem sort of reluctantly because the offense certainly did some good things. You know, the offense for the Commanders wasn't all bad. This was a mixed performance by the offense, but there was not enough good from the offense. The biggest problem for the offense to me was the pass protection. Taylor Heinicke got pummeled on Sunday afternoon, and this was especially disappointing because Taylor had not taken a single sack in each of the previous two games, but he ended up taking 5 sacks in this game. The Commanders allowed the Giants to finish with 5 sacks and 10 quarterback hits. This was a wild game for the Commanders' offensive line because, you know, it, from a run-blocking standpoint, did well, but the line from a pass-blocking standpoint wasn't close to being what you would want. You also had more injury for the offensive line. So the Commanders went into the game without multiple key offensive linemen. Right guard Trey Turner was inactive due to knee and ankle ailments. And remember, center Chase Roullier remains on the reserve injured list. This kind of gets forgotten, but Chase has been on that reserve injured list since September 20th due to a right knee injury that he suffered in the loss at the Detroit Lions in week 2. The Commanders' starting offensive line was Charles Leno Jr. at left tackle, Andrew Norwell at left guard, Tyler Larson at center, Samuel Cosmi at right guard. Yes, Cosmi ended up being the starting right guard, and Cornelius Lucas at right tackle. But Cosmi and Larson got hurt. Samuel Cosmi got hurt on the first offensive snap of the third quarter. He suffered an ankle injury. Boy, has Sam Cosmi had a hard time staying healthy. But replacing him was Wes Schweitzer. He was back on Sunday afternoon. The Commanders on Saturday activated Wes to the 53-man roster from the reserve injured list. He had been on that since October 1st due to a concussion that he suffered in the loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field in Week 3. And then Tyler Larson got carted off the field in the fourth quarter. He was replaced by Nick Martin. Larson, after the game, was seen on crutches with his right leg in a brace. That's not good. He on Sunday night tweeted, quote, hashtag safer fields, end quote. That would be a clear shot at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. MetLife Stadium is considered to have one of the worst playing surfaces in the NFL. So the Commanders' offensive line had a lot going on in this game. The Giants are known for blitzing. The Giants are known for having some quality pass rushers in guys like Kayvon Thibodeaux and edge defender Azeez Ojulari. And the Giants ended up generating a lot of pressure on Sunday afternoon, and the pressure was not handled well by the Commanders. I mean, how about the disastrous play in overtime? The Commanders' 13th offensive drive was their second offensive drive in overtime, resulted in a three and out. The first snap of the drive, a first and 10 for the Commanders at their 10. Kayvon Thibodeaux came in unblocked for a sack of Taylor Heinicke for an 8-yard loss. You have the ball at your own 10, you take an 8-yard loss on a first and 10 sack. The play nearly resulted in a game-ending safety, and Thibodeaux was not blocked. He came in unblocked. He was not picked up by Charles Leno Jr. Now, hard to say who exactly was at fault for this, but obviously something went wrong. This was Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday afternoon on this play.
We missed a protection call on the sack near the end of the game. We had a opportunity to correct it, and we didn't correct it, and we were late because of it.
All right, there you go. It's possible that that sack was on the center, Nick Martin. It's also possible that that play was on the quarterback, Taylor Heinicke. Taylor on Sunday afternoon had two fumbles on sack strips, including a lost fumble on the opening drive of the third quarter. This was a killer. Commander's sixth offensive drive, opening drive of the second half, the third snap of the drive, third and 8 for the Commanders at their 25. Taylor Heinicke, a lost fumble on a sack strip by Azeez Ojulari, who got through tight end John Bates and running back Antonio Gibson. Taylor was under duress for so much of the game. You know, he ultimately quarterbacked a Commanders offense that went just 3 of 14 on third downs. This was another bad game for the Commanders offense in terms of third downs. Taylor did throw for 275 yards, but on 41 pass attempts. That works out to a yards per pass attempt of just 6.71. Some costly penalties for the Commanders on offense. The Commanders' eighth offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's fourth quarter missed 52-yard field goal. The ninth snap of the drive tied in Cole Turner, a first and 10-yard holding penalty. The Commanders' ninth offensive drive resulted in a fourth quarter three and out. The first snap of that drive, first and 10 for the Commanders at their 9. Charles Leno Jr. committed a 5-yard holding penalty. You know, the Giants for the 2022 regular season through week 12 were just 28th in the NFL in pass defense per Football Outsiders DVOA metric. This was a Giants pass defense that could have been feasted on, but the Giants pass defense was not feasted on. That said, there were some really good things from the Commanders offense. Taylor Heinicke, to me, was more good than bad. You know, he notched his fifth fourth quarter comeback as a Washington quarterback in the regular season. He now has 5 fourth quarter comebacks over 22 regular season starts for Washington. Pro Football Reference defines a fourth quarter comeback as an offensive scoring drive in the fourth quarter for a team trailing by one score, though not necessarily a drive to take the lead. Only drives from games that end in wins or ties are counted. Well, Taylor should be getting credit for a fourth quarter comeback for his work in this game. Now, it is true that fourth quarter comebacks are in part a function of opportunity, i.e., If you're on a mediocre or bad team, you're likely trailing in games quite often, and thus you're going to have more opportunity for fourth quarter comebacks. But, you know, it's hard to have five fourth quarter comebacks over 22 regular season starts and not be doing at least a few things well, okay? The Commanders' 10th offensive drive resulted in Taylor Heineke's 1st and 10, 28-yard shotgun touchdown pass to receiver Jahan Dotson with a minute 45 left in the fourth quarter. Dotson was spectacular on this play, a tremendous run after the catch. The ensuing extra point tied the game at 20. But the first snap of the drive, 1st and 10 for the Commanders at their 10, Taylor Heineke beat the blitz with an 11-yard shotgun completion to receiver Terry McLaurin. The fifth snap of the drive, the next to last snap prior to the second half two-minute warning. 4th and 4 for the Commanders at their 27. Taylor Heineke, a 20-yard shotgun completion to receiver Curtis Samuel off Taylor scrambling to his left on a broken play on which three Giants players were running after Taylor. What a play this was by Taylor Heineke. The seventh snap of the drive, the first snap after that second half two-minute warning, and the snap right before the touchdown, Taylor Heineke, a 2nd and 10, 25-yard shotgun completion to Curtis Samuel. Ron Rivera, during his post-game press conference on Sunday afternoon, on what he saw from Taylor Heineke during that game-tying drive in the fourth quarter.
I mean, that's kind of him. He's going to take what's in front of him, and then he's going to take a shot here, and then he's going to try and make something happen, which he did. And because that's who he is, that gave us a chance. I mean, and again, if we can eliminate some of the missed things, I think he could have made a few more plays for us.
Okay, and as for what Rod Rivera saw on the 4th and 4, 20-yard completion to Curtis Samuel from Taylor Heineke.
That's kind of his thing, you know, is that when he's on the move, he creates, he can buy time, and what's really even better about this is his teammates are in tune with that. You know, when they see him break the pocket, now they get into scramble mode, guys start finding open areas, and he's got his eyes down. He's not looking to run, he's looking to throw the ball downfield, and that's one of the attributes, I think, that really helps him, is because he is a very headsy guy, and he understands that there's guys downfield.
Yeah, you know, Taylor Heineke in this tie at the Giants, for the first time in 7 starts in the 2022 regular season, had a game in which he had at least 2 touchdown passes versus no interceptions. Taylor's first touchdown pass of the game, really impressive. Commander's second offensive drive resulted in Taylor's first quarter 3rd and 4, 19-yard shotgun touchdown pass to receiver Terry McLaurin. Now, this was another instance of a Commanders receiver making a great play. Terry made a one-arm catch with his right arm, then broke through an attempted tackle by Fabian Moreau, and then jogged into the end zone. But Taylor on the play, very nice job of stepping up in the pocket and away from pressure from Azeez Ojulari, and then making a sidearm throw to Terry McLaurin. Taylor in this game completed 27 of his 41 pass attempts. That works out to a completion percentage of 65.85. That's good. And Taylor did all of this while taking a pounding. Again, the Giants finished with 5 sacks and 10 quarterback hits. There is a toughness to Taylor Heineke that I know that he gets credit for, but I don't think you can harp on that enough. This guy is tough, man. You know, and all of the durability questions that people had about him going into last season, isn't it funny how those questions have just disappeared? This guy has held up over the last 2 seasons, making a bunch of starts for Washington. How great were the Commanders' top 3 receivers in this tie at the Giants? Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and Jahan Dotson. Maybe the single best game this season in terms of all 3 of those guys, all producing at substantial levels. Terry, Curtis, and Jahan. I mean, this to me is Washington's best top 3 at receiver since Pierre Garçon, Deshaun Jackson, and Jamison Crowder in 2016. And, you know, Terry, Curtis, and Jahan could be, and I stress that word could, be the team's best top 3 at receiver since the greatest top 3 at receiver in franchise history, the Posse. Art Monk, Gary Clark, and Ricky Sanders. Now, you know, we're not there yet in terms of Terry Curtis and Jahan being at that level, but in terms of the best top three at receiver for the team since the days of the posse, Terry Curtis and Jahan may be the team's best top three since the posse. We'll see what happens the rest of this season and beyond. Terry McLaurin on Sunday afternoon, big game, 8 receptions for 105 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets. He drew a penalty, and he should have drawn another penalty, as we discussed earlier in the segment. But, you know, Terry, with his performance in this game, became just the 6th player in NFL history to have at least 50 receptions and at least 900 receiving yards in each of his first 4 regular seasons. And he joined receivers Randy Moss, A.J. Green, Michael Thomas, Mike Evans, and Joey Galloway. Pretty good company. Terry had that great touchdown reception that I hit on, the Taylor Heinicke first quarter, 3rd and 4, 19-yard shotgun touchdown pass to Terry, who made the one-arm catch with his right arm, then broke through the attempted tackle by Fabian Moreau, and then jogged into the end zone. The Commanders' 4th offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's 2nd quarter 42-yard field goal for a 13-10 Commanders lead. Terry on this drive, multiple key moments. 2nd snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, 2nd and 9, 20-yard under center play action completion to Terry McLaurin. 3rd snap of the drive, Taylor, 1st and 10, 9-yard shotgun completion to Terry. 7th snap of the drive, 3rd and 7 for the Commanders at the Giants 41. Terry drew a 5-yard holding penalty on Fabian Moreau. And then on the 12th snap of the drive, Terry should have been rewarded with a pass interference penalty on Fabian Moreau. Terry had multiple impressive receptions on screens in this game. Commanders' 8th offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's 4th quarter missed 52-yard field goal attempt. The 5th snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 12-yard shotgun play action completion to Terry McLaurin on a screen. The Commanders' 3rd offensive drive did result in a 2nd quarter 3-and-out, but the 3rd snap of the drive on a 3rd and 13 for the Commanders at their 22, Terry McLaurin, a tremendous job of generating yards after the catch on a 12-yard reception on a shotgun screen pass from Taylor Heinicke. Terry nearly got the 1st down on that play. Curtis Samuel, he on Sunday afternoon, 6 receptions for 63 yards on 7 targets and 3 carries for 23 yards. He had the 2 big receptions on the Commanders' game-tying drive in the 4th quarter. He also had a big run in overtime. The Commanders' 12th offensive drive was their 1st offensive drive of overtime. Did result in a punt, but the 2nd snap of the drive, Curtis Samuel, a 2nd and 8, 21-yard shotgun handoff run. And Jahan Dotson, he on Sunday afternoon had 5 receptions for 54 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets. Came into the game having not done much lately, right? Jahan Dotson was a pretty significant topic of conversation in the days leading up to the game. Jahan came into this game having totaled just 2 receptions for 27 yards on 4 targets over 3 games since returning from a 5-game absence that was caused by a hamstring injury. But Jahan on Sunday afternoon was back to being a big-time factor, and his touchdown reception was one of the plays of the season for the Commanders. A late 4th quarter, 1st and 10, 28-yard touchdown reception on which Jahan made a 5-star run after the catch, got by corner Zion Gilbert, and then spun away from corner Nick McLeod en route to the end zone. Jahan on the reception generated 21 yards after the catch. This was a 28-yard touchdown reception. Jahan produced 21 yards after the catch. Also, that Commander's 2nd offensive drive, which resulted in the Taylor Heinicke first quarter touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin. The 1st snap of that drive, Taylor had a 1st and 10, 16-yard I-formation play-action completion to Jahan Dotson. So we in this tie at the Giants did have some good stuff from the Commanders' passing offense, and we had more good production from the Commanders' rushing offense. The Giants for the 2022 regular season through week 12 were number 27 in the NFL in run defense per DVOA, and the Commanders in this game adequately exploited the Giants' run defense. Running backs Brian Robinson Jr., Antonio Gibson, and Jonathan Williams, and receiver Curtis Samuel, those 4 guys combined for 34 carries for 159 yards. That works out to 4.68 yards per carry. Brian Robinson Jr. had another impressive game, 21 carries for 96 yards, and he had two receptions for 15 yards on two targets. The Commanders' first offensive drive resulted in the Joey Sly first quarter 21-yard field goal for a 3-0 Commanders lead. Brian Robinson Jr. on this drive, three carries for 23 yards and one reception for 10 yards. The sixth snap of the drive, second and 10 for the Commanders at the Giants 22. Brian Robinson Jr. had a 16-yard under center toss run. Antonio Gibson, he on Sunday afternoon played despite being questionable for the game due to a foot injury. He had nine carries for 39 yards and two receptions for 20 yards on four targets. The Commanders in this game moved the ball. They finished with 411 total net yards of offense and won the time of possession battle by 12 minutes, 12 seconds. This is why the 20 points were disappointing. Bad pass protection, costly penalties, bad on third downs. The margin of error for the Commanders with their style of offense, you know, this conservative run-heavy offense, is slim. And there was too much error for the Commanders on offense on Sunday afternoon. More from Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday afternoon.
It really is kind of who we are. I mean, we play close games, play tight games. You get some breaks, you don't get some breaks. You know, the one I think that really still kind of hurts us a little bit is the sack fumble in the opening third quarter. You know, we gave them position to score, and they scored a touchdown. And from that point, we were battling back to get back to even. And we were fortunate enough that we did it. It was a heck of a throw and catch, and then run by Jahan to give us a chance to win it at the end. And so that's part of it right now. That's who we are. That's our identity. You know, we try to run the ball, be physical, keep them close, and then see what happens.
Yeah, well, we're 13 games into the Commanders' 17-game 2022 regular season. Have a pretty good idea of who and what the Commanders are. Just like we, after 40-plus years, know what the law firm of Paulson and Nace is about. Founded in 1979, Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace treats its clients with respect and dignity and wants what is best for the firm's clients. Paulson and Nace will treat you, your family, and your situation with the care and expertise that you deserve. And Paulson and Nace is excellent at what it does. Paulson and Nace has recovered millions of dollars for the sick and injured. Heck, this past July, Paulson and Nace won a case for which the United States government must pay nearly $1.8 million. This to a former American University field hockey player because of a military doctor's failure to diagnose and treat the student for a 2011 concussion that left her with permanent symptoms. You may have read about this. Paulson and Nace took on the U.S. government and won. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. When you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. Don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, when tragedy happens, let the family of Paulson and Nace take care of your family. The Commanders' defense in the 20-all tie at the New York Giants on Sunday afternoon, you know, it didn't always feel like the defense played well, but ultimately it did play well. Yet again, keep in mind, this is a Commanders defense that remains without arguably its top corner and definitely its top linebacker. Corner Benjamin St. Juice was inactive for a second consecutive game due to a right ankle injury that he suffered in the win at the Houston Texans in Week 11. And linebacker Cole Holcomb is on the reserve injured list. He's been on that since November 25th due to a foot injury that had caused him to be inactive for each of the Commanders' previous four games. Cole has not played in a game since the win over the Green Bay Packers at FedEx Field in Week 7. Also, still no Chase Young. Edge defender Chase Young on Sunday afternoon, inactive again due to his right knee. We're still awaiting on his 2022 season debut of him suffering the torn right knee on November 14th, 2021. And the Commanders remain without the guy who was supposed to be their number three interior defensive lineman this season, Fedarian Mathis. He has been on the reserve injured list since September 12th. Due to a left knee injury, a reported torn left meniscus that he suffered in the first quarter of the win over the Jacksonville Jaguars at FedEx Field in Week 1. But the Commanders' defense on Sunday afternoon, to me, played well. You start with the most basic but important thing. The Commanders allowed the Giants to score just 20 points. Over four quarters and an entire overtime, the Commanders held the Giants to just 20 points. This was the ninth consecutive game in which the Commanders allowed 24 points or less. That is the longest active such streak in the NFC. Also, the Commanders held the Giants to just 4-13 on third downs. The Commanders' defense has been very good on third downs this season. Also, the Commanders held Giants running back Saquon Barkley to 18 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. That works out to just 3.5 yards per carry, and two of Saquon's runs totaled 34 yards, so his other 16 carries went for just 29 yards. Saquon Barkley now joins the list. That would be the list of standout running backs who the Commanders have contained this season. The Dallas Cowboys' Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard. The Minnesota Vikings' Dalvin Cook. The Houston Texans' Damian Pierce. Now Saquon Barkley, all contained by the Commanders this season. We had another takeaway. The Commanders generated a takeaway on the opening drive of the game. The Giants' first offensive drive, fourth snap of the drive, second and five for the Giants at their 42. Interior defensive lineman Jonathan Allen, a forced fumble. Linebacker Jamin Davis, the fumble recovery on a five-yard shotgun read option run by quarterback Daniel Jones. The ensuing Commanders' offensive drive resulted in kicker Joey Sly's first quarter 21-yard field goal for a 3-0 Commanders lead. I mentioned John Allen. More excellent work by John and fellow interior defensive lineman Deron Payne on Sunday afternoon. John had a sack in addition to his forced fumble. Deron had two more sacks. Remember, the first three letters of Payne are P-A-Y. And this guy is going to get paid this offseason off this contract season from the heavens that he's having. But Giants' second offensive drive resulted in a first quarter three and out. Second snap of the drive on a second and seven for the Giants at their 28. Deron Payne, a sack of Daniel Jones for a 9-yard loss as Deron abused right guard Mark Lewinsky. The Giants' 12th offensive drive was the opening drive of overtime, resulted in a punt. The fourth snap of the drive, third and five for the Giants at their 43. Deron Payne, a sack of Daniel Jones for a 7-yard loss. How big was that sack? Credit as well to Jonathan Allen and edge defender F.A. Obata for generating pressure on the play. John did get banged up on the play, but he came back into the game. Deron Payne for the 2022 regular season now, a career-high 8.5 sacks and a career-high 16 quarterback hits. Again, the first three letters of Deron Payne's last name, P-A-Y. The bad from the Commanders' defense and the tie at the Giants had to do with the Commanders again having problems with Daniel Jones. I tell you, if you didn't know better and all you ever saw was Daniel Jones against Washington, you would think that this guy is an elite quarterback. Jones on Sunday afternoon completed 25 of his 31 pass attempts and had 12 carries for 71 yards. We talked so much about Daniel Jones, the run threat, and yet the run threat ended up delivering on the threat. Now, it is worth noting that Jones, over his 31 pass attempts, threw for just 200 yards. That works out to a yards per pass attempt of just 6.45. Also, the Commanders did sack Jones four times and did generate that lost fumble. But Daniel Jones made a lot of plays in this game. The Giants' fourth offensive drive resulted in Saquon Barkley's second quarter first and 10, 13-yard under center handoff touchdown run. The first snap of the drive, corner Christian Holmes got beat by receiver Darius Slayton out of Daniel Jones' first and 10, 55-yard under center play action bomb to Slayton. The fourth snap of the drive, third and 7 for the Giants at the Commanders 23. The Commanders gave up a 10-yard shotgun scramble by Daniel Jones as edge defender Montez Sweat gave up contain. The Giants' sixth offensive drive was their first offensive drive of the second half, resulted in Daniel Jones' third quarter second and goal 6-yard under center play action touchdown pass to receiver Isaiah Hodgins, who beat Christian Holmes. Third snap of the drive, third and 4 for the Giants at the Commanders 14. The Commanders gave up a 7-yard shotgun run by Daniel Jones. He had other big runs in this game. The Giants' third offensive drive resulted in former Redskins kicker Graham Gano's early second quarter 48-yard field goal that cut the Commanders' lead to 10-3. Fourth snap of the drive, the next-to-last snap of the first quarter, Commanders gave up a second and 8, 21-yard under-center play-action scramble by Daniel Jones, who had wide-open real estate up the middle. And also on the play was a 5-yard holding penalty by safety Cameron Curl. And even on that Giants' first offensive drive that resulted in the Daniel Jones lost fumble, the second snap of the drive, the Commanders gave up a 2nd and 7, 9-yard under center play action scramble by Daniel Jones. By the way, Christian Holmes, he got benched in favor of corner Danny Johnson. And Johnson did play well. He finished with a sack and 2 pass defenses. Here was Commanders head coach Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday afternoon on benching Holmes in favor of Johnson.
You know, we wanted Christian to be a little more aggressive. Danny was a little more aggressive. You know, he almost had a couple interceptions today because very smart, hezzy player.
Yeah, overall, good job by the Commanders' defense in this tie at the Giants on Sunday afternoon. And the Commanders needed that. As we talked about last segment, the offense was good, but also not so good. Commanders' special teams on Sunday afternoon, some good and some not so good. Joey Sly, 2 of 3 on field goals, 2 of 2 on extra points. He connected on a first quarter 21-yard field goal and on a second quarter 42-yard field goal, but he had a missed 52-yard field goal in the fourth quarter with the Commanders trailing 20-13. And how about that third quarter 3-yard kickoff return by running back Antonio Gibson? Gibson on Sunday afternoon had 2 kickoff returns, a 24-yard return of the second half opening kickoff, but also a disastrous 3-yard return on which he fielded the ball at the Commanders 2, but only got to the Commanders 5. The ensuing Commanders offensive drive was that drive that resulted in a punt despite the drive consuming nearly 8 minutes off the clock. And we had corner Rashad Wildgoose committing 2 penalties on one play. Wildgoose committed 2 penalties on a fourth quarter Giants punt. He was guilty of both an offside penalty that was declined and a 9-yard holding penalty that was accepted. The ensuing Commanders offensive drive started at their 9 and resulted in a punt. Up next, we'll begin unpacking the non-Commanders items from our Washington, D.C. area sports weekend, including the Wizards, who on Sunday evening got destroyed by one of the best players in the NBA. He plays for the Los Angeles Lakers, and no, I'm not talking about LeBron James.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Well, a bad weekend for the Wizards. Two more losses. The Wiz now have lost six of their last seven games. Friday night, a 117-116 loss at the Charlotte Hornets. The Wizards did not lead in the game over the final three quarters, trailed by 22 points in the third quarter. The Wizards did then win the fourth quarter, 28-10. And then Sunday evening, the Wizards fell to 11-13 with a 130-119 loss to the Los Angeles Lakers at Capital One Arena. The Wizards did not lead in the game over the final three quarters, trailed by 29 points in the third quarter. Bradley Beal back to dealing with injury. He on Sunday evening played for just 3 minutes 29 seconds as a starter due to right hamstring tightness. Beal in the loss at the Hornets on Friday night had a mixed game in 39-46 as a starter. He went just 2 of 8 on threes and committed 2 of his 3 turnovers over the final 90 seconds of the game, with the Wizards trailing by a point at 117-116. But Beal also went 10 of 16 on twos and 7 of 8 on free throws, finished with 33 points, 7 assists, and 6 rebounds. Beal in the fourth quarter that the Wizards won 28-10 scored 11 points, but now we got to see where he's at with this right hamstring issue. The Wizards continue to be without Rui Hachimura. He now has missed 8 consecutive games due to right ankle soreness. Also, the Wizards continue to be without DeLon Wright. He remains out due to a grade 2 right hamstring strain that he suffered in a 120-99 win over the Detroit Pistons at Capital One Arena on October 25th. Friday night, the Wizards' defense was horrible over the first three quarters, then was great in the fourth quarter. The Wizards, over the first three quarters, allowed the Hornets to score 107 points, go 12 of 22 on threes, and have 22 assists versus 3 turnovers. But the Wizards, in the fourth quarter, held the Hornets to just 10 points, 0 of 7 on threes, and just 4 of 16 on twos. Sunday evening, the Wizards' defense really was all about one guy, the Lakers' Anthony Davis. The Wizards got assaulted, victimized, and brutalized by Anthony Davis on Sunday evening. They allowed Davis in 37 minutes, 33 seconds as a starter to have 55 points. Yeah, double nickel, 55 points. Also, Davis had 17 rebounds and 3 blocks. He went 2 of 3 on threes, 20 of 27 on twos, and 9-9 on free throws. The Wizards had zero answer for Anthony Davis. This was Wizards head coach Wes Unseld Jr. during his post-game press conference on Sunday night.
He's a really good player. Obviously, trying to look at his impact in pick and rolls. We knew going in the combinations of pick and rolls between him and LeBron, Westbrook, and it was strength of that team. And we didn't handle it very well. Tried to make some adjustments and didn't do that very well either. I think he got a lot of easy ones, putbacks, you know, got to the line, drives, transition. And I think, you know, all those combinations of plays really kind of pad things up. So now he's just playing with a level of comfort.
Yeah, Anthony Davis got quite comfortable playing against the Wizards on Sunday evening. The Wizards in this loss to the Lakers also were not very good offensively. Corey Kispert went 4-6 on threes off the bench. The rest of the Wizards went a combined 6 of 33 on threes. Kispert finished with 16 points in 29-36 off the bench. He also played well in the loss at the Hornets on Friday night, played for 31-22 off the bench, including for all 12 minutes of that fourth quarter that the Wizards won 28-10. Kispert went 4-7 on threes, 1-1 on twos, and finished with 14 points, 5 rebounds, and a team best plus minus rating of plus 17. And speaking of playing off the bench, guess who is back to playing a decent amount? Daniel Gafford. Good to see this. He had been buried in the doghouse of Wes Unseld Jr., but Gafford has been playing a good bit over these last two games now. Gafford, in the loss at the Hornets on Friday night, played for 23 minutes, 38 seconds off the bench, including for all 12 minutes of that fourth quarter that the Wizards won 28-10. This marked his most playing time in a game since playing for 24 minutes, 46 seconds off the bench in a 113-105 win over the Dallas Mavericks at Capital One Arena on November 10th. Gafford, in this loss at the Hornets on Friday night, 10 points, 12 rebounds, including 6 offensive boards, and an astounding 6 blocks. Now, he did go just 3 of 8 from the field, all twos, and did go just 4 of 10 on free throws. But geez, 10 points, 12 boards, including 6 offensive rebounds and 6 blocks in less than 24 minutes off the bench. And then Gafford, in the loss to the Lakers at Capital One Arena on Sunday evening, played for 20-36 off the bench. He went 9 of 10 from the field, all twos, 1 of 2 on free throws, finished with 19 points, 7 rebounds, including 4 offensive boards and 2 blocks. When Daniel Gafford is on, his per-minute production is really good, and his per-minute production in each of these last two games, quite good. We have seen Wes Unseld Jr. play Gafford and Kristaps Porzingis at the same time some, and that pairing is showing some promise. Also for the Lakers on Sunday evening, LeBron James, 34 minutes, 27 seconds as a starter. He went just 2 of 7 on threes, but 10 of 19 on twos, 3 of 4 on free throws. He finished with 29 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists versus 5 turnovers. And the former Wizard, Russell Westbrook, 28 minutes, 38 seconds off the bench, 0-1 on threes, 3 of 7 on twos, 6 points, 15 assists, versus 6 turnovers and 7 rebounds. Next up for the Wizards at the Chicago Bulls, Wednesday night at 8. All right, let's talk some college basketball. We, over the weekend, had games for number 22, Maryland, Georgetown, number 3, Virginia, and Virginia Tech in that order. We'll take the games in that order. Big win for number 22, Maryland. The Terrapins improved to 8-0 overall and 1-0 in the Big Ten with a 71-66 win over number 16, Illinois, at Xfinity Center in College Park, Maryland, on Friday night. This was the first big test for the Terps this season, and they passed the test. Now, passing the test wasn't easy. The Terps blew an 11-point second-half lead, but they ended the game on a 9-4 run. And how about the timing of the game? This game happened one day before the one-year anniversary of Maryland on December 3rd, 2021, announcing that Mark Turgeon, quote, in a mutual decision, end quote, was stepping down as head coach for the Maryland men's basketball program. Remember, that announcement came out of nowhere. Turgeon, in stepping down on December 3rd, 2021, stepped down a mere 2 days before the Terps' Big Ten opener for the 2021-2022 season, which ended up being one of the more lifeless and depressing Maryland basketball seasons in decades. Well, here we are a year later, and, well, I'm not going to plant the flag of victory, okay? We still have to see a lot more from this team with Kevin Willard as its head coach. Boy, if you are a Terps fan like me, how do you not feel so much better about the program right now as compared to a year ago? Willard with the 95-67 blowout of St. Louis in Connecticut on November 19th became the first head coach in Maryland men's basketball history to begin his first season as Terps head coach 4-0. Well, he's now 8-0, and among those wins is a win over a ranked team in Illinois. You know, Turgeon is Maryland head coach in regular season games against Associated Press. Top 25 teams went just 19-41. The lack of big wins for Turgeon as Terps head coach, to me, was the biggest problem for Turgeon as Terps head coach. Well, Kevin Willard now is 1-0 as Maryland head coach in regular season games against AP top 25 teams. You know, Kevin Willard and others practically begged fans to come to this game on Friday night, and the crowd for the game ended up being great. Announced attendance was 16,380, and the crowd was loud. This was Willard during his post-game press conference late night on Friday night.
That's what Damon and I, that's what we talked about. I want to get this program back to way to a championship level. To get it back to a championship level, you need a building like that every night. I mean, if you look at Kansas's, Kentucky's, those type of programs, which I think this program is on that level, they have a crowd like that every night. And if we can get that every night, you're going to win more games than you're going to lose.
Yeah, that crowd on Friday night really was reminiscent of the great home crowds that the Terps had with Gary Williams as their head coach. Now, of course, you got to give crowds reason to be loud, and the Terps on Friday night did that, thanks in large part to two players, Jameer Young and Hakeem Hart. Now, they weren't the only two Terps players who played well on Friday night, but Young and Hart combined for all 9 of the Terps' made threes and for 41 of the Terps' 71 points. Jameer Young, he's a graduate transfer from Charlotte. He went to DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland. He connected on a big contested three from just to the right of the top of the arc with the shot clock winding down for a 70-66 Terps lead with 14.3 seconds left in the second half. That was the shot of the game. Young in 34 minutes as a starter, 4-9 on threes, 5 of 11 on twos, and 2 of 2 on free throws. He finished with 24 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists versus 1 turnover. And Hakeem Hart, 34 minutes as a starter, 5 of 6 on threes, 1 of 3 on twos. He finished with 17 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists versus 1 turnover. The Terps on Friday night won despite getting outscored in the paint 44-28. The Terps held Illinois to just 5 of 20 on threes, but allowed Illinois to go 22 of 41 on twos. Julian Reese did have a tough game, 29 minutes as a starter. He committed 4 fouls and 3 turnovers. He went 1 of 2 from the field, all twos, and just 3 of 6 on free throws. Scored just 5 points, did have 7 rebounds. But the Terps got the big win. Next up for Maryland at Wisconsin, Tuesday night at 9. So Maryland appears to be on the rise, but Georgetown continues to fall. Man, the Hoyas. They fell to 4-5 overall with a 74-71 overtime loss to South Carolina at Capital One Arena on Saturday afternoon. The Hoyas lost to a South Carolina team that came into the game just 3-4 overall in the 2022-2023 season, including a 79-55 loss at George Washington last Wednesday night. Yet Georgetown at home lost to a South Carolina team that lost to GW by 24 points. And this was yet another game for the Hoyas in which they blew a significant lead. The Hoyas blew an 11-point halftime lead. Georgetown so far this season is choking away leads left and right. This really is something. The Hoyas began their season with a 99-89 overtime win over Coppin State at Capital One Arena on November 8th. The Hoyas in that game blew a 5-point lead with less than 20 seconds left in regulation. Georgetown went 1-1 in the Jersey Mike's Jamaica Classic. The Hoyas on November 18th got routed by Loyola Marymount 84-66 in Jamaica. The Hoyas in that game blew a 42 32 halftime lead, lost the second half 52-24. The Hoyas on November 20th defeated LaSalle 69-62 in Jamaica, but the Hoyas in that game blew a 41-21 halftime lead. They then ended the game on a 7-0 run, and the Hoyas in a 74-70 loss to American at Capital One Arena on November 23rd blew a 16-point first half lead and a 40-30 halftime lead. The Hoyas this season cannot hold on to a significant lead to save their lives. The Hoyas on Saturday afternoon allowed South Carolina to go 15 of 21 on twos after halftime. South Carolina's best player is this guy, Gregory G.G. Jackson, the second. He went scoreless in the first half, but then scored 22 points in the second half. The Hoyas held South Carolina to just 10 of 31 on threes, but went just 3 of 18 on threes. All three of the Hoyas made threes came from one guy, Arizona State transfer Jay Heath. He had a good game. He's a local. He went to what was then known as Woodrow Wilson High School in Washington, D.C. He last month was declared eligible by the NCAA to compete this season. Heath on Saturday afternoon, 42 minutes, 30 seconds as a starter, 3-9 on threes, 4-5 on twos, 6-6 on free throws. He finished with 23 points and 6 rebounds, but the rest of the Hoyas went a combined 0-9 on threes and just 6 of 13 on free throws. The Hoyas lost despite having just 9 turnovers to South Carolina's 16 and 23 points off turnovers to South Carolina's 4. Next up for Georgetown, home to Siena, Wednesday evening at 6:30. Number 3, Virginia, improved to 7-0 overall and 1-0 in the ACC with a 62-57 win over Florida State at John Paul Jones Arena in Charlottesville, Virginia on Saturday afternoon. The Cavaliers led by 10 points with less than 90 seconds left in the second half, then saw that lead get cut to 3 with less than 10 seconds left, but ultimately held on for the victory. This was not a pretty victory for the Cavs, but this was a victory. The Cavs made their last 7 free throw attempts, went 21-26 on free throws. FSU went 9-9 on free throws. The Wahoos, shockingly, were very good defensively. I mean, this has been the case for years under head coach Tony Bennett. Virginia wins with defense, and UVA on Saturday afternoon certainly won with defense. The Hoos held FSU to just 6 of 18 on threes and just 15 of 46 on twos, and largely defended without fouling. I mean, again, FSU for the game totaled 9 free throw attempts. UVA won despite not being good offensively. I mean, the score at the half was Florida State 22, Virginia 21. I mean, you know, this game was not a work of art. UVA for the game went just 5 of 19 on threes and just 13 of 32 on twos and finished with just 9 assists versus 12 turnovers. But Virginia got the win. 5'10 graduate student point guard Kihei Clark, for whom this season is his 5th collegiate season. He's been playing for Virginia forever. He had a good game on Saturday afternoon. 35 minutes, 27 seconds as a starter. He went 1 of 3 on threes, 3 of 6 on twos, and 9 of 10 on free throws. Finished with 18 points, 3 assists versus 3 turnovers, and 3 rebounds. Kihei got some revenge for what happened on his senior day last season. Virginia's previous game against FSU was a 64-63 home loss on senior day this past February 26th. The Cavs in that game blew an 11-point second-half lead. The concluding seconds of that game were crazy. Armand Franklin drilled a pull-up jumper from just beyond the free-throw line with 1 second left for a 63-61 Virginia lead. But then, incredibly, Matthew Cleveland connected on basically a shot from Cleveland, on a miracle spinning catch and shoot three from well beyond the three-point line behind the left wing off a three-quarters court inbounds pass for a 64-63 Virginia loss. No such dramatics on Saturday afternoon as the Hoos remain unbeaten. Next up for them, home to James Madison, Tuesday night at 8. The next Associated Press Top 25 poll will come out on Monday. Virginia has shot up the rankings in recent weeks. The Cavs for this game on Saturday afternoon were the number 3 team in the country. Here was Tony Bennett during his post-game press conference on Saturday afternoon on his team being the number 3 team in Division I this early in the season.
I don't want to say it's insignificant. It's significant to get off to a good start and play good basketball in the games we have, but the number's the number. There's so much basketball left, and there's such, you know, we were in fights at Michigan, Baylor, Illinois. I mean, those games, our first game against North Carolina Central. I mean, those are battles. And this game here, we aren't the kind of team that is just going to, you know, dominate you and think we can show up and just win. If we do, that would be surprising to me. And, you know, the message was, you know, walk in the way we should go today. Just walk in the right way, our way, how we have to play. And excuses or distractions, injuries, sickness. We had some guys banged up, and you could see that. Being tired, whatever the case, those are distractions. A ranking or, you know, oh, they beat us last year. We got to get revenge. That's what you, Florida State. None of that stuff matters. What matters is how you practice, then you step onto the court in the game, and all the other stuff is fluff. It's what you do between the lines. It's you, your opponent, and the officials. That's what it is. And nothing else matters. And everybody gets all hype. Oh, I showed our guys a cool video Jack Salt sent me. It was really good. It was a story about the plank. And it's about normalizing what you got to do and not getting caught up. That's what I think our best teams have done. And sure, they're young and they hear stuff, but it's our job to say, this is about playing and get ready as we can and prepare for a heck of a JMU team. They can score and they're good. And they took it to us last year, and we'll have to be ready. I get that.
All right. And then Virginia Tech, it on Sunday afternoon, notched a big win. The Hokies improved to 8-1 overall and 1-0 in the ACC with an 80-72 win over number 18 North Carolina at Castle Coliseum in Blacksburg, Virginia. Tech led for all but about the first 3 minutes, 10 seconds of the game, held Carolina to just 3 of 17 on threes, out-rebounded Carolina 39-25. Big game for Justin Mutz. He in 38 minutes as a starter, 1-1 on threes, 11 of 15 on twos, and 2-2 on free throws. He finished with 27 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 assists. Did commit 5 turnovers, but okay, fine. The Hokies are looking quite good so far this season. They should be ranked in the Associated Press Top 25 poll that comes out on Monday. Maryland, Virginia, and Virginia Tech all should be ranked in the AP Top 25 on Monday. Next up for Virginia Tech, home to Dayton, Wednesday night at 8. Well, the Capitals have a game on Monday night at the Edmonton Oilers at 8:30. This will be game 5 of a season-long 6-game road trip on which the Caps are 1-2-1. The Caps fell to 10-12-4 overall with a 5-2 loss at the Calgary Flames on Saturday night, but the final score was only part of the bad news for the Caps. The injury-ravaged Caps got even more injured. They lost 2 more players due to injury. Goaltender Darcy Kemper, he suffered an upper body injury in getting elbowed by Flames forward Tyler Toffoli and did not return to the game. And defenseman Martin Fehervaari suffered an upper body injury and did not return to the game. And he, after the game, had his left arm in a sling. This was precisely not what the Caps needed, more injuries. And yet the Caps got more injuries, including one to their number one goaltender. The Caps already were without a bunch of guys due to injury. Defenseman Dmitry Orlov and 5 forwards, Nicholas Backstrom, Tom Wilson, Connor Brown, Carl Hagelin, and Beck Malenstein. Those guys have been out for a while. It actually had been a bit of a while since the Caps had incurred another injury. And then all of a sudden, late night on Saturday night, 2 more injuries for the Caps. So with Darcy Kemper, he stopped 24 of the 26 shots on goal that he faced. But he, in the second period, suffered this upper body injury and, again, getting elbowed by Flames forward Tyler Toffoli. Kemper was relieved by Charlie Lindgren. He stopped 7 of the 9 shots on goal that he faced. We'll see how severe this injury to Kemper is. The Caps on Saturday night for a second consecutive game got smashed in the puck possession battle, but also did a good job of not getting smashed in terms of shots on goal. The Caps per natural stat trick had just 37 5-on-5 shot attempts to the Flames 65, but the Caps finished with 29 shots on goal to the Flames 36. I mean, that's not good, but that discrepancy could have been a lot worse. The Caps totaled 20 block shots. Defenseman John Carlson had a game-high 4 block shots, also had a third period even-strength goal. This game was similar to the Caps' previous game, the 3-2 overtime loss at the Seattle Kraken this past Thursday night. The Caps in that game, per natural stat trick, at 29 5-on-5 shot attempts to the Kraken's 63, but the Caps finished with 23 shots on goal to the Kraken's 25 as the Caps totaled 25 block shots. Still, though, I mean, you'd like to see the Caps be a bit better in 5-on-5 play than the team has been in each of its last two games now. The Caps on Saturday night did have a good game on special teams. The Caps went 3-of-3 on the penalty kill and 1-of-4 on the power play. Winger Connor Sheary had a first period power play goal. You know, Sheary for this 2022-2023 regular season is second on the Caps with 9 goals. First on the Caps in goals is winger Alex Ovechkin with 13. He on Saturday night played in what was his 1,300th career regular season game with the Caps, but he had no points, just one shot on goal, and just 3 total shot attempts. He did have 3 block shots and 3 hits. But how about this with Ovi? He, despite leading the Caps in goals, is dead last on the Caps in plus-minus rating. And I know that plus-minus rating isn't everything, but Alex Ovechkin for the 2022-2023 regular season has a team-worst plus-minus rating of minus 13. The first true winter meetings for Major League Baseball in 3 years have begun. The winter meetings, in theory, are an annual multi-day get-together of MLB executives and managers and agents at which trades and free agent signings can get done, but don't necessarily get done. We in 2020 only had virtual winter meetings due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We in 2021 had no winter meetings due to the lockout, but we in 2022 have actual winter meetings. They're taking place in San Diego Sunday through Wednesday. We do not expect significant activity from the Nationals this offseason due to their rebuilding state and ownership uncertainty. We do expect significant activity from the Orioles this offseason. They finally are coming out of their rebuild, and O's executive vice president and general manager Mike Elias has said that the O's are going to spend money this offseason, although what exactly that means is anyone's guess given the Orioles ownership uncertainty. Remember, we have the Angelos family feud. The Orioles ownership group, of course, has been led by Peter Angelos and his sons John and Louis Angelos. Peter has been in failing health for years. Louis Angelos, this past June 9th, filed a lawsuit against his brother, John Angelos, and their mother, Georgia Angelos, for control of the team. The situation is rather messy. Anyway, we over the weekend did get some Orioles news. We on Saturday afternoon had multiple reports that the O's have agreed with free agent starting pitcher Kyle Gibson on a 1-year contract. He would seem to be the Orioles' replacement for Jordan Lyles. The O's on November 9th announced that they had declined their club option for the 2023 season for Lyles. I would not have had a problem with the O's bringing back Lyles, but he for the 2023 season would have received an $11 million salary. The O's may well be able to get from Gibson in 2023 what they got from Lyles in 2022, maybe even more, and for cheaper. We don't know the exact terms of the Gibson contract, but it's safe to say that this isn't some mega money 1-year deal. Kyle Gibson is entering his age 35 season, so he is an older pitcher, but there are two things that I really like about Gibson. The first is that he has been extremely durable. Gibson, over his 10 Major League regular seasons, 2013 through 2022, has a 162-game average of 34 starts. This guy has a very limited injury history. He gives you starts, he gives you innings. That's a big deal. A second thing that I like about Gibson is that he has done some good things over the last two seasons, during which he pitched for the Texas Rangers and Philadelphia Phillies. Gibson, on July 30th, 2021, was traded by the Rangers to the Phillies. Gibson, in the 2021 regular season, was outstanding for the Rangers. He had 113 innings over 19 starts, had an ERA of 2.87, and an ERA plus of 154. 100 is average, above 100 is good. 154 is terrific. Gibson, over the 2021 and 2022 regular seasons with the Phillies, had an ERA of 5.06. That obviously is really bad, but his fielding independent pitching, his FIP, which is an ERA-like number that accounts for that which a pitcher truly controls, home runs allowed, walks allowed, hit by pitches allowed, and strikeouts, was 4.21. The Phillies over those two seasons were horrible defensively. And the thinking with FIP is that it is a truer representation of how good a pitcher is because a pitcher can't control the defense behind him. The Phillies for the 2021 regular season ranked dead last in the majors in defensive runs saved at minus 54. The Phillies for the 2022 regular season ranked number 25 out of 30 major league teams in defensive runs saved at minus 34. And the O's for the 2022 regular season ranked tied for number 9 in the majors in defensive runs saved at plus 38. The idea with Kyle Gibson from the Orioles' perspective would appear to be that he, with the Phillies, pitched better than his ERA would suggest, that he was the victim of some horrendous defense by the Phillies. The O's have become a lot better defensively, in part due to them now being all in on analytics, so the O's maybe, hopefully, can maximize Gibson. There's also this. Kyle Gibson is much more of a ground ball pitcher than Jordan Lyles is, and that's big. You always much rather have a pitcher who gives up grounders than a pitcher who gives up fly balls. We'll see exactly how much more from the O's this offseason is coming, but them agreeing on a one-year contract with Kyle Gibson makes sense. All right, one more item before we call it a show. College football. Bowl games are set. Maryland will play number 23 NC State in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Yes, the Mayo Bowl at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina on Friday, December 30th at noon. Liberty will face Toledo in the RoofClaim.com Boca Raton Bowl in Boca Raton, Florida on Tuesday night, December 20th at 7:30. And Liberty has found its head coach to replace Hugh Freeze, who was left to become Auburn's head coach. Liberty has hired a Coastal Carolina head coach, Jamie Chadwell, as head coach. We had an introductory press conference on Sunday afternoon. That's a good hire for Liberty. Chadwell at Coastal Carolina, 31-6 over the last three seasons. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Tuesday's show, episode 457. We'll have a lot more on the Commanders off them moving to 7-5-1 with this 20-all tie at the New York Giants on Sunday afternoon. We on Monday expect to have the day after the game press conference of head coach Ron Rivera. Also on Tuesday's show, I'll talk Capitals. They are at the Edmonton Oilers Monday night at 8:30. Have a great rest of your Monday, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
I addressed them, and I wasn't sure how to address them. Because we came up here and we expected to win, and we didn't. We tied, and it's, because it doesn't hurt us, it doesn't help us.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.